Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian. Okay, so this is Dr. J, and this is Natural Solutions with Dr. J, and I have a very, very special guest today. It is Sevyan Sordian, my oldest daughter.
And favorite.
I'm sure that Ella will be listening to this, and she says the same thing every time. So, you just finished, not too long ago, 4 years at UCLA, and you have an undergraduate degree in...
psychology with a minor in gender studies.
All right. So in the course of your studies there and in the course of just your social life, what kind of things do you feel like you have learned that are going to be helpful for a career in therapy? You plan to do psychotherapy with people, either group therapy or some other kind? One-on-one?
The goal is to become licensed to do therapy, mostly one-on-one, with adolescents and adults who suffer from disordered eating.
Disordered eating?
Yeah, and body image issues.
So disordered eating and body image issues. Now, I recall that in high school, you also were part of some kind of a special club at Berkeley High School?
Yes, I was part of the Body Positive, which my friend Maya Balburak started the club at Berkeley High, and I was in it. We mostly just talked about body positivity and the influence that society and the media have on women's body image and body image in general, not just for women. It was a great club. We went to a workshop through the Body Positive, which is an organization that was founded in Berkeley, and learned a lot about what healthy eating means and listening to your body, and that kind of stuff.
So it's called Body Positive?
Yeah, the Body Positive.
The Body Positive. And so is that something that's only in high schools?
No, it's a technique of thinking and treating negative body image all around. And there are many professionals who are trained in this method, as well as students, and they have different retreats and workshops for this. They just had one this past August and also one in May.
Oh, so you keep up on that, or have you actually attended some of those as well, or do you have special training in that arena as well?
I couldn't attend them because I was in LA in May, and I was in Yosemite in August, during the August one, so I couldn't attend them, but in the future I would love to learn more about it. I don't have any specific training for that, just my own knowledge and hearing about the experiences of others and learning about different topics related to psychology and gender and societal influences, things like that.
So, is it possible to get certified in doing the body image?
The body positive.
You can get certified to train and teach it?
Yeah, you have to be trained in it, and then you can teach it.
Now, so when you were during your undergraduate studies, you have worked in a couple clinics. Now, one, you were working doing administration, but also sat in on the staff discussions about different cases. Mm-hmm. And then also after you graduated, then for a while you were working at another facility. Mm-hmm. What was that?
It was called Bridges to Recovery. It was a
Bridges to Recovery?
Yeah, Bridges to Recovery. It's a residential treatment facility. There are two locations in LA, and it was basically a mental health rehab. So we dealt with all sorts of issues from schizophrenia to schizoaffective disorder, bipolar, depression, anxiety. There were also, your first diagnosis couldn't be an eating disorder in order to be admitted, but you could have a dual diagnosis with, you know, anxiety or OCD or whatever it might be. So it was interesting to work there. One time I had a client who we had to keep a food log for her, so it was interesting for me to observe, you know, what she was eating and if she was going to the bathroom after meals to, you know, binge and purge. She was purging after meals, so tracking her meal, her food intake, and observing her was really interesting.
So that was a dual diagnosis situation.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I first, as you know, I've been on the board of directors of HAART, HART, mm-hmm. for 20-some years.
Right.
And there's a facility down in, I guess it's Fremont area, where San Leandro, John George Pavilion, and that's the county psych hospital. But they also have a lot of dual diagnoses things there, and I had some of my patients were working there, and it had to do with alcohol and drug addiction. But then there was a secondary diagnosis. So that's when I first heard about it, was in the context of alcohol and drug addiction treatment, mm-hmm. the dual diagnosis concept. Now, so has it been around a long time? Is it typically like related to alcohol and drugs first, or it?
I don't think it's necessarily related to alcohol and drugs first. It's just more of a tool to use when someone has more than one issue that they're dealing with or need treatment for more than one thing. It's a way to like specify what it's for, what they need treatment for or what they're struggling with. And also, obviously, also for admittance purposes in certain facilities. If it's specifically a drugs and alcohol facility, then you'll need a drug or alcohol addiction diagnosis. And then you could have other diagnoses in addition to that. But if it's, you know, for a mental health rehab like the one I was working in, then it has a different purpose.
All right. So, what are some of the key things that you feel like you've learned so far related to eating disorders and body image? Because that's kind of the arena that you're looking to go into.
Yes.
As a specialty.
Mm-hmm. I've learned many things. I think first and foremost, exclusively for that field, but just treating every client or friend or anyone with compassion and with respect and with kindness. It's just a general life lesson that I think will go very far in therapy as well. Also, regarding eating disorders, I've learned that a lot of them stem from some kind of struggle with control, and that it can appear or manifest itself in struggling with food.
What do you mean by having issues around control?
So, like if someone feels like they have to be in control all the time, and they feel like they aren't, in control of something, like if they, you know, aren't doing well in school or some such other thing, like if they, and if it's like an ongoing problem, that they feel like they're not in control of whatever they're doing, then they, instead of working to control that, they might try to control, for example, their eating. So that's, it's a way for them to exert control over something that's totally their choice. So they can control what they're eating, when they're eating, how much they're eating. And having those choices and those decisions that they make can manifest in an eating disorder. But sometimes, and not always, and it can come from different places, but sometimes that's because they don't feel control over other parts of their life.
That's interesting. So do you feel like people have to have control over something in their life or a certain percentage of their life in order to not have to manifest control over other things that are sort of like secondary? Or
I think it's on a case-by-case basis.
I see.
Because some people don't have this tendency for control. Some people do. And so if you're more prone to that, maybe you're more prone to eating disorders, but don't quote me on that either.
Uh-huh. So you would say, I mean, in common parlance, there's people who are control freaks.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what you're talking about? That kind of a control freak, kind of personality,
mm-hmm,
or something?
Yeah.
So this podcast is called Natural Solutions with Dr. J. And so what are some of the natural solutions to help a person in that arena? If first of all, how would you identify someone who has a lot of control issues?
I mean, you can kind of tell.
You can?
Yeah, if you get to know someone and you see that they always want to make decisions, or they're, you know, they make schedules really well, they're really, really good at planning, that can kind of be some sort of, you know, sign that they like control. Also, the way that they interact with other people can be an indicator for that. But I think a natural solution would be, you know, talk therapy. Oftentimes, giving people tools or strategies to either change their control or let go of it a little bit can be super helpful. Personally, mindfulness, meditation is a good idea as well, just because it's a way to recenter yourself and helps sometimes put things into perspective.
So, like, as you know, I last 4 years or so, I've been involved with studying bank code. And in bank code, there's a blueprint type, and that individual doesn't like to have a lot of risk and wants to really emphasize safety. We're going to stop here for a second while this train goes by, because it's going to like block out the sound. So I was mentioning something about the blueprint type individual who safety is very important, and they need a lot of step-by-step process in their life in order to feel secure and safe. Now, that's not necessarily a control freak. On the other side, there's the action type person who's into freedom, opportunity, spontaneous stuff. Like if you're going to have a birthday party, they want it to be a surprise birthday party. Whereas the blueprint, they want to know in advance. They don't want anything sprung on them. They don't want spontaneous dates or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know in advance, and that makes them feel very comfortable. But it's not necessarily control freak kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there's different degrees of that too.
Of course.
And in the whole arena of eating,
mm-hmm,
and health, I mean, you have an extremely healthy diet. You always have since you were young, right?
Yeah.
So what would you say are some of the key things that are really important to help one not only grow properly and mature properly, but to have more emotional stability? Are there particular particular things that you should eat or things you shouldn't eat, or you also exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what are some of the benefits of healthy eating and exercise as far as mental health goes?
Well, I think that just the key is to have a balanced lifestyle. Eating enough nutrients of, you know, from all the different food groups and variety of foods, and exercising to stay healthy and, you know, maintain a fit lifestyle, but not in any excessive kind of way.
So what would be not excessive? What would be insufficient? For example, I just did a brief little podcast. It was based on some a study that Stanford University did that was published in the Mayo Clinical Proceeds in February 2017, talking about dementia and how they followed these veterans in their 60s, and then like 10 years later they checked after they had them do all this vigorous exercise to see what their metabolic rates were and stuff. And they found that people who had a higher level of metabolic rate and exercise at an earlier age had a much lower risk of dementia. So exercise, and they were suggesting that at least 30 minutes of vigorous exercise a day would be helpful for the circulation to the brain. So do you feel like 30 minutes a day is like the minimal that people should have? I mean, like, I think you and your sister exercise, do some pretty strenuous exercise every day, certainly much more than I have. I do.
Right.
And so I admire that a great deal. It's
Thanks.
Like really like, wow, you guys are so, and you're so dedicated to doing it. And so is there a particular feeling that you get out of it?
Yeah, I feel great.
You feel great, but what is like?
Well, I feel great in that. Also, immediately after, I just like feel like I worked really hard, and it feels like instant gratification to me. I know to a lot of people it doesn't feel that way, but I also really feel great about it. You know, when I like have to move a box from one place to another, and I can do it easily, or I pick up a chair with one hand and like move it across the room without breaking a sweat, or without, you know, feeling like I exerted a lot of energy, because I know that that's my body telling me that I'm strong and that I've been taking care of it. And I definitely think that happened a lot this summer, because I worked in a kitchen, and an industrial kitchen, and so we had to pick up huge boxes of food and carry them across the kitchen, and, you know, chopping all day, mixing things all the time. I feel like my strength, my upper body strength, really built. Like now I do things so easily. And it's great. I feel really proud of myself that I'm that strong.
Well, do you feel like that was a result of the work, or actually, I mean, you've been working out since you were fairly young, and you're doing a lot of exercise, upper body exercise and stuff like that. Don't you think that was just merely more of a reflection of what you'd already built up to that point, and you were just, you actually weren't used to moving boxes, but your body, you got in such good shape that you could actually do it effortlessly? Or fairly effortlessly, and so you're going, wow, this job has really made it that way, but really it's really this progressive.
I think it's a combination, because everything in the kitchen was functional, you know, like, yes, I'm at the gym and I'm doing bicep curls, and like, that's one movement.
Yeah.
And I can do a bicep curl or a shoulder press, but like, that's still one movement. When in reality, like, that's not how I'm going to use my strength. I'm going to use it by picking up a box and using a bunch of different muscles to hold it up, and then if I'm putting it up above me, then I'm gonna like, yeah, do a shoulder press, but it's also it's a movement that I'm, and I'm doing something with it. So that was, I might have come in with some strength, but I think I developed it over the summer as well, just because I also know that certain things were harder for me in the beginning and were pretty easy by the end, and also because like I didn't work out while I was at camp.
That was your workout.
Yeah, working in the kitchen was,
So jobs that require a lot of physical labor, a lot of physical movement, lifting, pushing, throwing things up on shelves and stuff like that, is like another way that people can get exercise. But a lot of people are very sedentary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like working in the field of being a psychotherapist or something, I mean, mostly you're sitting, maybe you're getting up, showing some exercises, or if you're doing EMDR, you're moving your hand back and forth, or if you don't have a bar or something like that. But largely it's a very sedentary lifestyle.
That's sad.
Yeah.
It's just a reality of our modern society is most jobs require you sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day.
Or sitting in a truck or something.
Yeah,
or something else.
Usually sitting. Yeah. Right now I feel super lucky because, yes, I sit probably 5 hours a day in my job, but I'm also moving around. I'm walking from place to place and, you know, moving my body more than some people do in their desk jobs. So that's really fun and great. But I still definitely feel like I need exercise and I need movement. I like to walk to work too, which feels nice. It's great that I'm able to do that.
So you'd say that an important component of mental health is exercise?
Yeah.
And eating well?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So anything else to tell the listening audience as far as the wisdom that you have developed over the years?
I think health is very important. And like we said, physical activity as well. Eating and physical activity, they can be super fun. You can get really creative with food and also with exercise. And, you know, it can be a group activity. And you can take hikes with friends and things like that. And I've really tried to encourage that kind of play date, if you will. You know, going on a hike instead of, like, going and eating more. And it's super fun. You know, it allows you to move your body and have great conversations and look at really pretty views a lot of the time. So that I like doing that, enjoying people's company, both in food and in movement.
Sounds like great ideas.
Thanks.
Great ideas. All right. So, thanks for this spontaneous interview.
Thanks for having me.
And we look forward to seeing you accomplish greater and greater things in the world of psychotherapy and helping people with body image. And
it's just all about motivation,
Motivation. All right. Everyone out there, get motivated. And we're looking forward to having you listen to our next podcast as well.
Yeah.
And so this is Dr. J.
And Natural Sordian.
And Savion Sordian on Natural Solutions with Dr. J. If you're interested in finding out more about how you or your relatives can avoid dementia, buy the book, Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic, 7 Key Memory Care Actions to Avoid Alzheimer's and Successfully Keep Your Brain Safe, Sharp, and Sexy into the Future. If you'd like to learn more about how to get an appointment with Dr. Sordian, please call the Redwood Clinic at 510-849-1176. And for information, go to theredwoodclinic.com. Thank you. If you'd like to be informed of upcoming podcasts, please subscribe to Natural Solutions with Dr. J so you know exactly when the next episodes will be coming up. Thanks a lot and have a great day.